That was a fight. Fish on.
Hey guys, I am here with Jeff Boggs. He is the owner of Boggs Custom Lures here in Vanceburg, Kentucky. How you doing, Jeff?
Doing good, buddy. How are you?
I'm doing good, man. It's good to finally sit down with you. I was here a few months ago, and I'm pretty sure you remember when I come down. I bought a couple baits off of you. My buddy Tim, Cameron, and several of my other buddies have your baits, and man, they are just killing it right now. I've got a whole box full of your baits, and I'm telling you, they're lights out. I can't say that I even have a favorite because I've had follows on every one of them, and I've caught muskie on a couple of them. So, you know, every one of them is producing some kind of, muskie in some way, shape, or form for me right now. So you definitely make some awesome baits. And I wanted to highlight your business, highlight you, and man, just, you know, talk about your business for a minute. So Boggs Custom Lures, Jeff Boggs here with me. Let's start off, man. Let's talk about your story, like how you got into fishing in general, because that's something that I love to hear from a lot of people, is just how they even got into the fishing realm.
Well, I've been fishing ever since I was a little kid, you know. It's just part of who I was, I guess.
Yeah.
And then when I got a little older, my grandpa, he was the only one in our family that actually fished, so we would go out with him, and we just sat on the bank, and we'd catch anything he'd buy, you know, carp, catfish, it didn't matter.
Yeah.
Just as long as we was catching something.
Right.
And then as I got a little older, I kind of got into bass fishing a little bit. And then I fished tournaments for a few years, and just a natural progression. You just move up. You're looking for something bigger.
Yeah.
Something a little more exciting. And then, I've been into the muskies for, 30 plus years probably.
Oh man.
I'm not just dedicated muskies. I fish bass a lot too still.
Yeah.
But, I usually take several trips a year just targeting muskies, whether I go into Canada or out west into Illinois or just up north in St. Clair, those places. I've been to most of those places at one time or the other.
I know it's kind of like what I talked to you just a little bit ago was I'd never been musky fishing outside of Kentucky, and that's something I want to do. You've got a lot more years on musky fishing than I do. You know, I've only got like 2.5, but so I'm sure you're full of a lot more knowledge than I am. But that's something I want to start doing, is taking some trips outside of Kentucky and really pursuing musky, because I went to Ontario about 3 years ago. And they didn't have muskie as far north as we went, but they had pike and walleye. The walleye fishing was lights out. You could catch like 80 in a day. But the pike, there was a lot of 30 to 35 inch pike. But the last day I hooked up on a 43 inch. And so that was icing on the cake for the whole trip, you know, catching that the last day. Yeah. So that's something I want to do and chase muskie in. So that's awesome that you do stuff like that. That's what's some places you go to? Like, what's some lakes? You're getting ready to go on a trip, right?
We're headed within a couple of days. We're headed to Kincaid Lake in southern Illinois.
Nice.
We're going out there and live with them for 3 or 4 days, which we've been doing that for years. We're going somewhere. I got a couple of cousins and a couple other buddies that all for probably 25 years. We go somewhere every fall.
Yeah.
We spent a lot of years on Cave Run. We spent a lot of years on Shelbyville.
Okay.
Now we're kind of doing Kincaid. We just kind of bounce around chasing a hot bite. We have done a lot of trips into Canada in the summer.
Uh-huh.
Lake Manitou, the upper and lower Manitou, northwest Ontario. I was going up there 3 times a year for a lot of years.
Oh, wow.
I go up and spend a week each time.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. Hey, I got to start doing that. Cave Run's I want to say it's my home lake, because it's mostly all I've fished other than a few tournaments this year. I've went outside and fished, you know, some other lakes, Green River Lake. I've fished a few creeks, but I would say 95% of my musky fishing has been on Cave Run,
right,
or, you know, the tributaries thereof. So Licking River, et cetera. So obviously, you know, I mentioned you make baits. All right. So how did you, like, what clicked one day? Like, what happened? You just decided, hey, I need to start making baits.
Well, when I got into musky fishing, I had been married a couple years, had a young boy at home,
okay,
like a year old son. and I had a job. It just paid okay, not great. And muskie baits was $20 a piece back then. Well, that's a lot of money for a guy. I couldn't afford to buy, you know, pay that kind of money for a bait.
Yeah.
So what I would do, my friend would have one, and I'd look at it, and I think, well, I can make me one of those. So it just kind of started out of necessity, really.
Yeah.
You know, I started out something simple, spinner baits, inline bucktails, and it just kind of grew. Over the years, I've made everything.
Yeah.
Crankbaits and gliders and topwaters. But for the last 10, 12 years, it's been mostly soft plastic.
You definitely have an art. You have it down to a science here, because I'm looking at some of your displays here. Man, these baits look amazing. Like all shapes and sizes and colors. And man, they all produce fish. Like I'm amazed at the talent you have there with the soft plastics. That's I'm not even sure how the clear coat works on those, because I've made wooden baits before and used, you know, epoxy clear coat and stuff like that. How is the I guess there's a clear coat goes on these too, right?
Yeah, it's just clear. It's basically the same thing as the paint.
Okay.
But,
you're fine.
After I paint it, I clear everything good. And okay. Just, it's like I say, it's just a clear paint. It's not really an epoxy.
Okay. Yeah, that's pretty neat how that works, because I've never made soft plastics. I wouldn't even know where to begin. I wouldn't even know where to begin making soft plastics. So that's pretty cool.
Other than the molding process, once you get past that and get the body made, it's really no different than a hard bait, a crankbait, okay, or something. It's just the products that you use are different.
Okay.
The process is the same, but the products are different.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah.
And it takes a while. That's how to paint soft plastic is one of the biggest secrets in fishing. The manufacturer's not going to tell you anything.
So I guess there was a good trial and error phase.
There was a long trial and error phase. And most of the advice that I got from someone that was already in the business was a deliberate attempt to steer you down the wrong road.
Really?
Because they didn't want the competition.
Yeah, they didn't want
the
competition. It makes sense in a way, but still.
Because, I mean, if you look, you go out there, there's really no people advertising soft plastic paints.
Right.
I mean, there's a couple companies that make them, but they're more for the hobbyist, not for someone that's really looking to do a lot of them.
Yeah.
Because this is you can get a water-based type of paint.
Okay.
But what I use is a solvent-based paint, which is, it's a little more toxic. It requires a lot of special PPE.
Okay.
But once you kind of get past that and learn the process, it's really no different than painting a jerkbait or a crankbait or anything.
That's neat. Yeah, that's something I've never attempted. I probably won't ever, but it looks fairly difficult.
It's really not as hard as it looks. It's not like I'm an artist, because a lot of that stuff is shot through stencils.
Okay.
Which was most all companies, even the big companies, they have stencils made for their different types of baits.
Okay.
So anybody can do it. You just lay the stencil over and shoot the right color in the right hole and go on down the road, you know.
Wow. So how did you come up with some of the designs on these? Like, it's just seeing fish in the water or just thinking in your head? Or
the colors, I do a lot of overseas business with just shad bodies.
Okay.
Into Europe and Germany, Norway, and Sweden, and Finland, and that kind of places. And they are very specific on what they want. They're fishing pike.
Okay.
The big northern pike over there. And they're very specific. And they have kind of, I mean, I've had them send me drawings where they've sat on our kitchen table and drew a picture of the bait and draw lines and want this color here and that color there. And,
oh, wow.
And you kind of get a feel for what people like.
Okay.
A lot of those color schemes that they have over there, these people, the U.S.-based market, I've never seen that.
Yeah. I had a guy, he was from the U.K. He sent me a picture of a bait fish I'd never seen before in my life. Of course, I was making crappie lures, and that was really the only paint I had, the only scheme I had, and I had so many people wanting a crappie, you know, it was hard for me to just stop and say, okay, let me, you know, try to make something else. He wanted a little bit different body style, and he sent me this picture of this bait, and it was freaky looking. And I was like, "There's so it almost looked like a rainbow fish." I was like, "What in the world?" And he was like, "Not a rainbow trout, but I mean, it just looked like rainbow colored, you know, all over it." And I was like, "What even kind of bait fish is that?" And he told me, and I forget, but he was like, "Can you make one of those?" I was like, "Honestly, I doubt it." But I guess, you know, being able to be versatile with how you paint is a big thing when making baits, but I am not very versatile, you know, with making my crappie baits. But
well, a lot of my colors, if you look across there, they're based on natural colors. There is some bright colors and some outlandish crazy stuff.
Yeah.
But most of them are based on a natural fish, you know, crappies and carps and suckers and shads and bluegills, and, you know.
Yeah.
And you can take a bluegill pattern, which, and you just change the colors up to bright colors, you know, and add a lot of oranges and chartreuses and lime greens and hot pinks and that kind of stuff into it.
Yeah.
And you can take the same pattern and make 10 different colors.
Yeah, that's I'm definitely inspired by your baits here. That's you say it's you're not really an artist, but that's definitely artwork. As far as the history of your business, I guess how many years you've been making baits? You said about 30 or so.
Yeah, probably 30 or so, at least I would think, maybe longer than that.
Nice.
And I, like I say, I used to make the crank baits and jerk baits, and you just make a few of those because they're pretty labor intensive.
Oh, I bet.
Okay, and then when I got into the soft plastic, 12, 15 years ago. Once you get your mold made, and I make 90% of the molds are made here in-house.
Okay.
So once you get your mold made, you can pour bodies pretty quick. I mean, you can make dozens of bodies in a day.
Oh, nice. Compared to like two or three jerk baits,
yeah,
maybe.
Exactly. So what happens is you try something and you like it. Well, you're going to try something new and you lay it down, make another one or two. And pretty soon you got piles of this stuff laying around.
Yeah.
So a buddy of mine, he said, you ought to put some of this on eBay. And I thought, well, you know, it'd be a good way to get it out of here. There's good stuff. It's just that I don't use it. And I can turn it into money to buy more supplies to make more. Well, I put a bunch on eBay, and it started selling. And it wasn't too long, and some of the people that bought it come back and said, hey, I bought this. Can I get another one of those? It's like, well, yeah, I could probably make you another one of those. So, and that's just the way it started, and it just snowballed from there.
Nice. So, you started off not even wanting to sell them or not even planning on selling them, I guess.
No intention really of getting in this business.
Yeah.
But it just kind of happened.
It's kind of crazy how that works because same thing with me. I don't make much baits anymore. I got two kids working full time. It's super hard. But I made three swim baits. I used to try my hand at making crankbaits for bass. I'll say half of them worked, half of them didn't. Just kind of fooled around, a few years ago, probably 7, 8 years ago. Did it a couple years on and off, basically for myself, you know, and just experimenting around, trying new things and getting into kind of woodworking-ish, you know, things. And then flash forward a few years, I'm living in an apartment, and I decide, talking with Cameron, I was going to make some shad swim baits. And he goes, why don't you make crappie swim baits? He said, Ten will probably eat a lot more shad than they do crappie, obviously. But he said, you hear these crappie guys, you know, they hook up on a crappie and a big muskie will grab it. He said, just something different. He said, why don't you paint them crappie color instead? So I did kind of like a little triangle head design, you know, where they kind of a little bit different than a snub nose, you know, rounded face type, you know, style. And redesigned them to kind of more crappie driven and made three just to give away. And lo and behold, Cameron caught a 50 and a half on one. I was like, well, so people were wanting them. And I was like, yeah. So I made a few, sold a few, and I just can't, you know, I can't do it. But now you with your shop and all that stuff, man, you just, gosh, man, I can't imagine. You're rolling out the lures. I bow in your presence because that's just amazing how well you're able to do this. So, you know. Easily too, you make it look easy.
Yeah, we spend a lot of hours out here in the shop because, like I say, we do everything here from hand bending all the wire frames, and we pour all of our own lead here.
Oh, nice! Man, you do it all here.
It's
then,
all
don't you?
Done here.
Yeah, all from scratch. It's one thing to, you know, talk to a company that mass produces plastic baits by the thousands, you know, every day or whatever in big factories, but you know, you do all this out of your shop here at your house,
right?
Man.
Well, I've done it for a lot of years trying to work a full-time job. I'm a carpenter by trade, so working 50, 60 hours a week and then working another 30 or 40, 50 hours a week, making baits at night and on the weekends, and it just got too rough. It's just time. It's hours.
Yeah.
You spend a lot of hours here. And in addition to all what you see hanging here, stuff that we made, I'm one of the few guys in the country that custom paints soft plastics. So the other people send me stuff, Bondi baits, Red October tubes, Bulldogs, Medusas, that kind of stuff. We do thousands of those.
Wow.
Here, which are brought in just
on top of what you're doing.
On top of what we sell of our stuff, yes.
Nice.
We actually do some painting for some companies. You know, I'm working with Red October right now. I got in a shipment of tubes 2 weeks ago, 300 tubes. We've got one-third of them already shipped out of here. And Bondis, I don't know how many hundreds of Bondis we went through this year.
Wow.
Probably 400, 500.
Man, they're keeping you busy for sure.
Yeah.
So I got a question then. With the evolution of your lures, you know, I don't know. Are you making stuff that you were making 30 years ago or?
No, not really. Like I say, we're just been into soft plastic stuff 10, 15 years, something like that.
Okay. Yeah. I wasn't sure because, I mean, I wasn't sure if, like, you know, you had stuff here that you've been making for that long or if there was maybe stuff that you don't make anymore that you've made. You know,
well, yeah, there's a lot of stuff. If you look over here in our cabinets where we got molds, there's 200 or 300 molds there.
Stuff
that we've made over the years. Really, the only thing that I make that I made 30 years ago would be like a spinner baits.
Uh-huh.
You know, I put together half a dozen new spinner baits to take to Kincaid this week. Bass spinner baits, buzz baits, some of the wire stuff that I just use personally.
Yeah, because you're making bass baits now too, right?
We do have a line of soft plastic bass baits. Yes. Now, those are all injected here. Okay. Most of the bigger stuff that you see hanging here is all hand poured.
Okay.
Which are open pour molds.
Okay.
A lot of our bass stuff is all injected molded. So we have a line of worms and Cinco's and swim baits. And
I got to get some of those Fire Tiger swim baits off of you because those are pretty sweet. So you make Brush Hogs, Fire Tiger, Brush Hogs, swim baits, Neds.
There's Neds and there's Cinco's and Crawls and Beavers and I even got some crappie, like little tiny crappie flukes.
Crappie jigs and stuff. Yeah.
We got a bunch of frogs. There's two or three different kinds of frogs and I can't even remember all of them.
That's a lot of baits.
Yeah.
I see you got a few totes here, bass stuff. I see, man. That's a lot of baits. But yeah, it's awesome. So where was you originally making baits? Did you always have like a little building or something? Or
no, when I first really started, I was living up the road here about 6 or 8 miles. And we had like a 3-bedroom house that we had rented and like a spare room back in one end that we didn't really use. So I just kind of set it up as a little shop.
Okay.
And I made done all my work in there. And then when I moved down here, after I got my house built, I took like a year off from making anything because I built my house back here.
Okay.
And once I got it done, this building that we're in now was just a shell. It was just a metal pole barn building, and it had half a floor in it. And you can see the crack right there. This half was poured. That half wasn't. So I come in here, and we poured the floor, and I finished the walls and insulated it and wired it. It didn't have nothing. It was just a hollow building.
Yeah.
And I had intentions on setting it up as a bait shop when I built it. So, and I've got a little paint room built in the back corner, and I got another room in the back corner over there where we pour all the lead, and we got a station over here beside me where we pour all the plastic, and I've just kind of set it up in little stations because I knew what I wanted to be able to do it, but it's taken a long time to get there.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I was going to say, I mean, you got a ton of baits hanging up on the wall over there, which those are your personal ones, aren't they?
Yes, those are hanging behind the boat over here.
Yeah, that's a lot of baits. What's the biggest muskie you caught?
At 50.
Man, I dream of that day.
I've caught a couple of 49 3/4. Those are more rare than 50s.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the most honest measurement.
Yeah, I've caught a couple of them. 49 3/4, ain't I?
The most honest measurement, yep. I don't know that I wouldn't lie and put another quarter inch on there. Like, I'm just being honest with you. If I caught one and I laid it down on a bump board and it was 49 3/4, I'm going to admit to everybody listening, I'm probably going to lie and throw another quarter inch on it.
Say it's going to grow a little bit, is it?
Yeah. I dream of that day. My biggest muskie, my two biggest actually come on bass gear. I was muskie fishing the first time. I was out on Cave Run. I threw a crankbait, a larger crankbait on muskie pole, muskie combo I had. And I was reeling it in, and a muskie, it was ended up being right at 40 inches. It was like 39 3/4. I called it 40. See, that's me, rounding up. But it followed it in, but my crankbait got hung in some grass, and I was like, crap. So as soon as my crankbait got hung up and lodged, it just turned around and went back. I watched it go right back into a big pile of brush. So I got my crankbait loose, and I was worried, I guess, in my, my mind, where I'm fairly new at muskie fishing, it was actually the first muskie I ever caught. So it was my personal best for a while. I was freaking out, and I was like, oh, I got to hurry up and cast something at this thing. So I grabbed my bass pole, and I had a little double five on it, and I threw it out there, and two cranks, boom, this thing annihilated it. And which it was a medium heavy bass pole. It was a real nice bass pole. So I was able to get it in fairly quick, netted it and released it. And it was 39 3/4, and I was pumped. And that same day I ended up hooking up on another one with that same crankbait and lost it. And I had five follows that whole day. So it was a really good day for me.
Right.
Of course, there's been days where I've been absolutely skunked, more so than I've seen muskie. But once again, I'm new at this thing too, so I'm still constantly learning, and it's one thing we talked about before. You're still learning, I'm still learning. Yep. If you're doing this thing at all, and you're serious about it at all, you are constantly growing, constantly learning, evolving, learning new tactics. But then the second one, I was actually at Spillway Cave Run and was bass fishing for white bass back, a few months back, and caught, I don't know the measurement on it because I didn't have a net, muskie net, so I just kind of quick released it, but it was bigger than the 39 3/4. So I got a quick picture with it and put it back in the water. I didn't want to keep it out of the water long, so I know it was bigger than 40. It wasn't a 45. It wasn't a 44. It might have been 41, 42, but it was a lot thicker than my personal best, and I've only caught 12 muskie to date compared to your probably hundreds. But that was a fun day. But both my biggest muskie come on bass gear.
Yeah, that's pretty common.
Yeah. Yeah. They say on Cave Run, if you want to catch a muskie, bass fish.
Yep.
That's what I was told. Isn't it crazy how muskie, and we had this conversation last time I was here, how I guess smaller lures work better in the lakes a lot of times, right?
It depends on your forage base.
Okay.
Cave Run, the forage base is shad.
Okay.
The size bait that they eat day in, day out is 3 or 4 inches.
Okay.
So
that makes sense.
You're matching the hatch with the smaller stuff.
Yeah.
As opposed to like some of the creeks, when you get away from the rivers, they don't have a lot of shad up in these creeks, but they got a lot of big suckers.
Yeah.
So, you get guys that's using 10, 12, 14 inch baits in little tiny creeks.
Yeah.
Because that's
because it works.
Matching the hatch kind of a deal.
It's crazy how that works. Because I see so many people, and I've caught muskie on big lures.
Yeah,
but it's crazy how so many people use bass gear. Cameron, my buddy Cameron, I told you about. He caught a 47. It's on his YouTube channel on a 1/4 ounce jig.
Mm-hmm.
He threw it, and a big muskie annihilated it. I was like, wow. I mean, it's just things people don't think about. A lot of bass lures, like you said, Cave Run, it makes sense with the shad. They got so much shad working so well for muskie.
Right. We fish down here at the mouth of the Kinnikinnick Creek where it dumps in the High River in the fall, late fall, winter for sauger. And we catch usually 2 or 3 smaller muskies, all 28 to 35 inches, on a 3-inch grub that you're bouncing on the bottom.
Yeah. I've seen a lot of people. I guess bass-sized crankbaits work really well for the muskie on Cave. I've seen a lot of guys talk about throwing crankbaits and hook it up on muskie. I'm a big crankbait guy when it comes to bass fishing, but now Cave, when I bass fish Cave Run, I'm usually drop-shotting or, slower on the spinner bait. I don't have a lot of luck with crankbaits on Cave. Maybe just the way I'm fishing.
Well, Cave Run has changed. See, I remember Cave Run long time ago, before the weeds, you had down there then was timber. It's wood everywhere because you didn't have the weed option. And crankbaits were the thing then. a spinnerbait and a crankbait is all you needed. The crankbaits they threw was hellbenders and Norman Baltic minnows, the 7-inch deep dive minnows, or that was your deep baits, and your shallow baits was a double aught AC shiner, which is like a little 4-inch.
Yeah, I've got one of those.
Yeah. That was one of the hottest baits going, that and a spinnerbait.
Wow.
And you didn't really need anything else.
Yeah.
But once the weeds came, see, that kind of kills the crankbait deal because the fish are not in the timber like they were. They relate more to the vegetation.
Yeah.
And
I actually had a conversation with a guy 2 days ago. We were fishing on Cave. And he was like, "You got any hellbenders?" I was like, "Of course I do." We were in timber. He was like, "I've never had one of these hung up." He said, "For whatever reason," he said, "they will come through timber like crazy." He said, "And this," he said, "you hear all these old timers talk about the hellbender." He said, "There was a lot of muskie caught." He said, "It was actually not uncommon to catch crappie on a hellbender."
Yep.
He said, I forget the guy's name. I talked to a guy in Crashes a while back. He was talking about how that's a lot of all they threw a lot of times was, he said, the crappie bite was tough. You know, he said, "We would throw hellbenders." He said, "It never failed. Every now and then they'd hook up on a crappie."
Yeah.
I don't know if it's just the way it comes through the timber or what, you know, it comes right through where they're at.
Down in their face, you know.
Yep.
Well, they don't know that that's too big for them.
Yeah.
You know, it just looks good to them. They try it.
Shoot, I was trolling it's a baby death rater, but still a death rater. I think 6 or 7 inches, and caught my buddy caught one. We were trolling. He caught a crappie on a baby death rater.
Right.
Just baffled me. It was probably a 15, 16 inch crappie. I was like, wow.
Yeah, the ones you catch on them bigger baits are usually pretty good ones.
Yeah. I remember I was trolling a flat stick, I think it's called. Forgive my lack of intelligence because I'm still trying to remember all these musky baits. I think it's called a flat stick, something like that. And I was trolling and caught a pretty good sized bass. It was like a 17 inch bass up around Poppin' Rock last year, trolling for musky. So it's kind of weird.
I catch some big bass musky fishing.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I typically fish smaller musky baits. My little Sinister family, I throw them shads a lot and the Sinister spins and spinner baits. Like I say, I make all my own. So I make like a downsize. It's be a big bass spinner bait or a small musky spinner bait. I throw those a lot just to kind of match the smaller bait of shads. And usually on a trip, we'll catch a bass or two, 5, 6, 7 pounds usually.
I caught it wasn't on one of your baits, but it was a bucktail. Still a decent sized bucktail the other day on Cave, and I caught it was my personal best lengthwise smallmouth. It was 21 1/4 inches, but it was up, you know, toward the riverside. But it was only 4.4 pounds, but it was a tank. It was just long. You mentioned the Sinister spin. Let's talk about some of the differences in your baits. So you've got the Sinister spin, which is pretty much a bladed swim bait, right?
It is exactly what it is. That little body that we do here, those are one of our few injected musky baits. Honestly, it was built as a bass bait for some guys in California commissioned me to build them a bass bait.
Really?
And it's molded hollow, and all the rigging goes in after the body's made and painted.
Yeah.
So it gives you the option of you can change it around, lighten it, change the weighting in it, change the rigging in it.
Yeah, you did that for me last time I was here. Yep. You changed the weight in one and changed some body.
And it lets you change the bodies out. You tear up a body, you can put a new body on your same rigging.
Yeah, you don't have to go buy a whole new lure. That's awesome.
But it is just like it's just a bladed swim bait. Most of mine has a number 7 fluted Indiana blade on it. There's a lot of companies that make those. I know MEPS made a rubber-bodied inline spinner for years, and then there's a couple other companies. But the problem I had with them is they didn't run upright. The bodies always ran flat.
Okay.
On mine, I designed them so where the body runs upright.
Yeah, I was going to say they run good for me.
Yeah, they run straight up.
I've got 3 of your Sinister spins, mostly because my buddy Tim Thompson was killing it in the creeks with him. And I was like, oh, man, all right. So I bought one and did really well with it. So I bought 2 more. I was like, I want to have a couple different color options. Then I've got some of the just, I guess those are what, 5-inch?
They're 6-inch.
6-inch. 6-inch just standard swim baits. I've got 3. I've got a white one. I've got the kind of brown, I want to say kind of suckerish looking. And then I've got a bluegill. And I had another one, and I lost it. I hooked up on a muskie, and it got off, and I cast it back out the same place, and I got hung on a log. And I didn't have my leader tied on right, or didn't have it tied on good, or maybe I hit a rock with it. My braid was frayed, and it just, the slightest pull, maybe the muskie, you know, maybe it just got a tooth on a braid or something, but it it come off pretty easy, and I was like, crap, so I lost that swim bait. But I've got, I think, three of your standard 6-inch swim baits. I've got three sinister spins, and I'm not bragging, but I like your baits.
Well,
this, I like, literally, so I want to sit down with you, because I'm a big fan. Then I've got one of the, what are these here? They got the big tail and small body.
They're called a wide tail.
Okay.
There's two baits hanging there. One's a ribbon tail. And okay. One's a wide tail, and you know, same body, just the tail's different.
Yeah.
Both of those have a real slow sink rate.
Okay.
Like 9 inches a second, and a lot of hang time.
Okay.
So guys love them in the creeks. They yeah. love them in the spring, cold front, any shallow water around weeds. You can fish them slow and fish them up and over.
Okay. And you have some that you'll put a chatterbait on the front too, right?
Yes, I can. About the ribbon tail, I can build that with a chatterbait.
Okay.
Internals in it. And a lot of guys like that. I'm kind of out of them. I think Matt Blackburn at Crash's Landing took all them I had left.
Okay. And you also put, like I see here, I actually just bought one. It was a swim bait with a chatter.
The chatter bait with the sinister shad body on it.
Yep.
Called a sinister shaker.
Man, you got a lot of variety. And then I can't remember the names of these.
The Mohawks?
Yes.
With all the tails?
Yeah.
It's the only four-tailed musky bait on the market.
That's wicked. It's huge.
It is big.
so you know guys that throw them a lot around here, or yes. they throw them a lot up north too?
I sent five to a guy this week that he sent me pictures of his last three that he had, and they was absolutely destroyed. He said last one he had six fish on it. Biggest one was a 44, and he was going fishing the next day, and he had took three and pieced them together to try to make one or two so that they could fish the next day.
Wow.
So there's several options on them, several versions. We've got a shallow. We can do a medium and a deep.
Okay.
And then there's one at the bottom that's got a larger back tail on it, which brings – I had some guys at Lake St. Clair.
Okay. Throwing big pounders up there.
Pounders is the thing to throw on Lake St. Clair.
Yeah.
Well, they wanted one with a bigger profile.
Wow.
For pounder size in the water. But those only weigh 9.8 ounces. I don't do pounders. I'm too old for pounders.
Shoulder replacement.
Yeah.
It's not a pounder, but it feels like you're reeling a dang cinder block through the water. It's throwing a double 10.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
And I threw a double 10 for about an hour, a couple tournaments ago, Muskie's Inc. I threw a double 10 for like 1 hour of that tournament, and I was like, I can't throw one anymore.
Yeah,
like I want to, but I can't. I just can't do it. But yeah, you got those, and then of course you got your larger swim baits, I guess, there on the end, right?
Yeah, there's there's a shad body style, which comes in a 12 and a 15 inch size.
Okay.
And then there's a brute style, I call it, which got the little fins and stuff at the bottom. Those are in two sizes, 8 inch and 11 inch.
Okay. Yeah, I've got an 8 inch crappie pattern of one of those.
Yeah, those fish, they're kind of a sleeper as a jigging bait too.
Oh,
because they're forward weighted.
Yeah.
So they fish like a jig. I mean, they swim like a swim bait too, but you can also vertical jig them as long as you're not really deep or in a lot of current. And they work pretty good for that too.
Nice. I'll have to try that with mine.
My original one is this one here. It's called a big boy.
Okay.
Which has got the big wide tail, but a pretty good sized body.
Yeah.
Those are pretty good jigging baits too. They have they're weighted right behind the eyes, so they're forward weighted also.
So have you ever tried to make a Bondi, or is that like something that's copywritten?
I would imagine he's got it copyrighted or patented or something.
Yeah,
but
patent.
I know John. I fish with John several times. So I wouldn't – and I do so much painting on his stuff because he don't paint anything. Everything that Bondi produces is just raw plastic.
Okay.
So – and I try not to copy other people's stuff.
Right, right.
I mean, because you look at my stuff, you understand it.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't copy anybody on anything for that. Right.
Yeah, I've definitely not seen anything like it. I know you said that who was it, Meps, that made like a sinister stop?
They made They made one for years. And then, you know, like, I think the retail shop, Raleigh and Helen's Musky Shop, they take big shad bodies and just kind of hand rig them themselves. But that really wasn't. Not saying their stuff is bad and wouldn't catch fish, but it just didn't suit me because I didn't. I I didn't like the bait, the body to run flat.
Okay.
So when I set out to design this, I wanted it to run upright.
Yeah. That
and,
makes sense.
And they do run upright.
Yeah. I don't see many shad swimming sideways unless they've been smoked by a fish.
That was just me. Probably really, probably wouldn't matter to the fish, to be honest with you.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, because depending on the angle of the fish, they could be under or inside. They don't really know.
Yeah.
You know.
True.
But that's just me. And you'll notice that you don't see any double blades on any of those.
Yeah.
Everything like that I on the Sinister spins is single bladed.
Okay.
It's not saying the double blades don't work because they do.
Right.
But when you go to Cave Run or with these popular lakes, everybody's throwing double blades.
Yeah.
I mean, you got 10 boats out there, 9 of them throwing double blades. The other one's throwing pounders.
Yeah.
So I like to do something a little different.
Yeah.
I can go behind people throwing double tens with that little single bladed swim bait and move fish that they would.
I've had plenty of success on it. And I know, like I mentioned before, I know many guys that love the Sinister spin.
Yeah.
It
throws really, really good because it doesn't have any skirting on it.
Right.
So it don't have like a parachute. I mean, in that heavy rubber body.
Yeah.
You can throw it a mile.
Yeah. And I love, even what you said before, and I really started paying attention to it after you told me, you cast these things and if you let it free fall sink, that blade kind of folds up, and that tail just
It just swim
awesome
bait
tail action just it's starts just falling.
A little swim bait swimming down.
Then you start reeling, that blade starts turning, swim bait action. Then you stop. It's like it nose dives, tail action. Man, it's just that's a really good design bait. Like I love them. Like I said, I've got three for a reason. So, let's say somebody's listening and they want to purchase one of your baits. If they fish creeks and rivers, what would you, I'm not going to necessarily say color, but what is a really popular bait that you make that is really good for creeks and rivers that maybe somebody listening would want to purchase?
The creeks, I would think a whitetail or ribbon tail or one of the, something in the Sinister family, because they don't sink real fast. You can keep them up. They're not, they're pretty good size, but they're not great big.
Yeah.
The problem that I have with the creeks, usually you have a lot of shallow water, you have a lot of cover.
Right.
And if you try to fish something that's too heavy, you'll be hung up all the time.
Yeah. Yep. I've had that happen. I waited out and got a Sinister spin. Last time I fished the river, I was bummed because I was like, man, which in my mind, I immediately went to, man, it's almost wintertime. It's cold. I was like, you know what? It actually ain't that bad today. So I waited out and got my bait. It's and it was my own fault. I was trying to kind of jig it like what I was telling you, and I shouldn't have been doing that in the creek, not the place that I was fishing. But and now for the lakes, you got like a demand or a certain bait that most of your lake guys want, or
it just depends on the area.
Okay,
seems like one style will work in an area, and I don't know whether it just works better in that area or the people that are there, them and their buddies like it. You know, everybody's got a bunch of buddies and they go fishing together. They all like the same things. Yeah. Same. And,
I just didn't know if maybe you had like an overall, but now like you said, it's going to depend on where you're fishing. But I guess if you got a lot of shad in your lake, probably want to downsize a little bit.
Well, typically, I try to match a hatch. Like I say, I like the smaller stuff.
Yeah.
You know,
it's going to be easier on your shoulder.
Yeah. I want something throws easy and comes back easy. I don't want to fight it all day long.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess I'm going to ask you this question, and it might – I don't know if you actually have an answer. I'm sure you have an affinity for all of your baits, but let's say I looked at you and said, all right, you can't throw any more of your baits. You can only throw one of your baits for the rest of your life. What would you pick? That's probably not a fair question. But
it'd be a tough question.
Yeah.
But it would probably be a Sinister spin.
Really?
I like the blades because you can keep them going, fish them up, and fish them down. If I had one family, it'd be the Sinister family because you could do so much with that.
Yeah.
You can change the weight. You can fish them shallow. You make them deeper, or, add blades and take blades away, and they're pretty versatile.
Oh, yeah. Man, I'm digging this Fire Tiger. What'd you call them with the chatterbaits?
The Sinister Shaker.
Sinister Shaker. I'm digging that Fire Tiger. I may have to buy a few more baits before I leave here. My wife's going to get mad at me. But, man, I always say that every time I'm here, I'm like, man, my wife's going to get mad at me. I got to get some more baits, though. Yeah, that's awesome. So, Sinister family, eh?
That would be my pick.
has your business, has shipping or anything been hurt at all with COVID? Because I know it's been crazy for a lot of businesses. I didn't know if maybe it's kind of been tough shipping stuff out and all that.
It has slowed shipping down a little bit, especially the international stuff.
Okay.
But it's actually the COVID has picked our business up.
Really?
I mean, because fishing is one thing that they promoted that you could do.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So it has become hard to keep up with demand for the last 3 or 4 months.
That's good. That's good for you.
Well, it is till you want to go fishing.
Yeah. Yeah. Man definitely has to make time to go fish. If he's making baits all the time and doesn't get to fish, I think he will burn out really quick.
Yeah, well, one thing about it is all my customers are great. So when I tell them I didn't get your order done because I went fishing for 2 days,
oh no,
they fully understand. They don't have a problem with that.
Good, good, good.
You know, because they have all put work aside to go fishing at some point.
Yeah. Well, that's good. That's good. I would probably get rude with somebody if I was making baits and they were like, how dare you go fishing? You know, get my baits done. Man, you got such a good variety of colors and sizes. And if you guys that are listening, you guys have to truly check these baits out. If you don't own any Boggs baits, you need to own some Boggs baits. Not just saying that because I'm sitting in front of this guy, but I literally have a box full of Boggs swim baits, Boggs sinister spins, a variety of his baits. I don't own any of the four-tailed beasts yet, but I may have to buy a couple. I'm not sure. Those things look awesome. They look wicked. That clown pattern. I love clown patterns, especially up north for pike. I've done really good on clown patterns in general. I go to Ontario this coming year. I'm definitely taking some clown pattern, your stuff with me. Because we did amazing. It was like, we could throw a bunch of different stuff, but the ratio of, you know, catching was just far beyond anything else when we were throwing the redhead chartreuse body. It's just, I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's just, the water up there was darker to us. We were Northern Ontario.
Right.
So the water was super dark. There was like 2 feet of visibility, but it was clear water to them. They was like, you know, it's how it is. But the water was so dark. Everything was solar powered. We had to be flown in. It was, like I said, it was super dark water, but maybe that's why. I mean, we threw other bright stuff, but it was just like the redhead chartreuse body was just lights out up there. And that's what a lot of guys talked about was clown right. pattern.
It's just the, I have found the pike, northern pike, they like a bright stuff to start with.
Really?
Now, where we would go in Ontario to the Manitou, something with orange in it, even though the water is crazy clear.
Yeah.
In the April, when the water was calm and the sun was out, you could see the bottom in 15 foot.
Really?
I mean, see every rock, every reed in 15 foot. But now, as soon as it gets cloudy or a little chop on water, the water instantly turns black and you can't see nothing in it, which is crazy.
Yeah.
But for pike, we'd go out musky fishing. We'd fish for 5 or 6 hours and not seeing muskies, we'd run back into some weeds or in back bay and we'd catch a few pike and you needed something with a little orange in it. You could take a white spinner bait, put a few strands of orange in it or orange trailer on it.
I'll have to try that.
That on that particular lake.
I'm going back up there in July. I'll have to try that.
Yeah.
Throw some orange. I definitely want to highlight your business.
Well, appreciate
it. Highlight, you know, the history of the shop and Boggs Custom Lures, because I am a fan, hardcore. I probably sound like I'm brown nosing in this episode, but I'm telling you, it's not just me. There's a lot of people that I know that absolutely love your baits. So if you guys listening, if you don't own a Boggs bait, check them out. Do you have a website?
I do not have a website. I have a Facebook page.
Okay, Facebook page.
Yeah, just Boggs Custom Lures on Facebook.
Okay.
There is thousands of pictures on there of stuff that we've done.
Awesome.
Probably tens of thousands of pictures. Yeah. And you can always send me a message through Facebook or.
And if they tell them the Evolving Angler podcast sent you, you get 7 baits for free, right?
Yeah. Well, maybe not quite that much. But it won't cost you any more. I'll say.
I'm just messing with you. So you guys check out Boggs Custom Lures on Facebook. Awesome lures. He's got something that's gonna fit, you know, the style of, water you're fishing, no matter where you're at. So I guess you've got baits, like you said, you got baits in several countries then, right?
Oh, yeah. We do a lot. we did do a lot of business into Europe and Germany and Sweden, and mainly shad bodies. They fish pike, those big European pike over there.
That's what you said. That's awesome.
They don't want any rigging in them. They just want bodies. And we send a lot of 12 and 15 inch bodies over there.
Man, that's crazy that you're in several countries. So what, do you remember your first out of the country order?
It probably through eBay.
Yeah.
You know, when I started selling on eBay,
Do you still sell stuff on eBay?
No, I haven't sold on eBay.
So I guess if somebody wants to order, they go straight through your Facebook,
yeah,
right?
Okay. They can just contact me directly.
Awesome.
We do a lot of custom colors. I have no minimum orders. If you see one of my baits and you want it, you can tell me what color you want, and that's what we'll do.
Awesome.
We're small enough that we can do single custom colors, single piece, or we can do 500 of one color. We're big enough we can do that too. So
that's good. That's awesome. Man, listen, I appreciate you sitting down with me. I won't take up much more of your time. I know you're a busy guy, but I wanted to come over and hang out with you for a little bit and get you on an episode here. Guys, Boggs Custom Lures, Jeff Boggs. Check him out on Facebook. Place an order. Go catch some muskie or some bass. Check out his bass gear. You got bass gear on your Facebook?
There's probably some pictures on there, but we haven't really posted a lot.
Okay.
If
somebody sends you a message wanting to look at them, yeah, I guess you
yes,
probably
should. I could do that. Okay. If there's anybody around the Cave Run area, I think Crash is Landing.
Okay.
They had a pretty good selection last time I was over a few weeks ago.
Awesome.
Of the muskie and the bass stuff. So
awesome. You guys check out Boggs Custom Lures on Facebook. Place an order. Catch some fish. You're not going to regret having some of these baits in your box. But you guys, listen, thank you for tuning in. Jeff, I really appreciate you, man.
Thank you, buddy.
Yes, sir.